Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with our Survivor voicemail show for episode number 7 of Survivor Game Changers. And of course, it's been an eventful week for Survivor. People all over the place are talking about what happened between Jeff Varner and Zeke the other night. And we will be hearing what you guys had to say. We're obviously going to continue to talk about that tribal council, but I'd like to talk about many other topics here today. And we're going to be doing that with my guest, Antonio Mazzaro. Antonio, longtime contributor to both this podcast and on post show recaps. We just picked up the torch of our Better Call Saul podcast over on post show recaps, and he's about to get back to also podcasting The Leftovers with Josh Wigler. So if you don't get enough Antonio today, there's plenty of Antonio to go around over on post show recaps. Now, many of you guys know that this has not been the easiest week to do a podcast, although it's probably easy compared to doing most other things, but this was certainly a challenge to talk about all of the emotion that went into Wednesday night's show. But I really appreciate all of the nice messages that I've gotten from people about the know-it-alls and my interview with Jeff Varner. And I've also gotten a lot of nice feedback about my interview with Hannah that I recorded on Thursday. So if you missed any of those shows, you could check them out at robhasawebsite.com or subscribe to the podcast, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Got a lot coming up too over the next couple of days. I'm going to get back into The Amazing Race on Friday night with Jessica Lee, so be on the lookout for that. And then also Big Brother Canada double eviction that happened on Thursday night. I am going to have exit interviews with both of the people evicted from The Odyssey who will remain nameless here to protect spoilers. But those exit interviews will be on Monday because Big Brother Canada isn't doing them because of the Good Friday holiday. So they're going to move those to Monday. So be on the lookout for that on robhasawebsite.com or in our wrap ups feed. Before we get to Antonio, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are the good people at Beachbody On Demand. Now, if you've been a listener to this podcast for a while, you may know that I have been using a Beachbody On Demand. Really, I had a New Year's resolution because I wanted to start exercising. I basically was 0 for 2016 when it came to my personal fitness, and I was looking for something because even though I am somewhat prolific in terms of generating podcasts, it really prevents me from doing anything else, and I'll really procrastinate leaving the house for any reason, most of all going to the gym because it's not a fun experience for me. But Beachbody On Demand is great because it is a total solution for health, fitness, and weight loss. I watch all of these different videos. They've got so many to choose from depending on what your fitness goals are, and you can do these workouts in your home. Some of them are as short as 20 or 30 minutes. It's been really the only workout regimen that I've ever been able to follow. I do it 6 days a week and I don't have any signs of stopping yet. I do find for me, it's easier to do it every day rather than try to go to the gym 2 or 3 days a week, because I'm always going to put it off. All you do is access the videos via computer, your web-enabled TV, a tablet, smartphone, or any other web-enabled device. What I also started doing, and this might be a little bit of a cheat, but I also have my iPad also next to the TV, so I'm watching a show and also doing a workout. I don't know if that's allowed, but that's what I've been doing. I watched the Big Brother Canada double eviction this morning. I hope that's not cheating. I almost dropped the weight a couple of times, but they've got so many different programs to choose from. P90X, which I'm about to start, T25, 21 Day Fitness Extreme. I just am about to finish P90, no X for extreme for me, but I am 90 days in, 13 weeks, and I'm really happy with the results. And best of all, if you travel, when I was traveling to New York, I was able to access all of the workouts there. I even did workouts 3 days of the week that I was in New York. So check it out. This is a brand new service offered by Beachbody, but they're almost at a million subscribers. So go ahead and give it a try. You could do a free 30-day membership to Beachbody On Demand. Check out all the programs. Just text the word Rob to 303030. That's the word Rob to 303030 on your phone and get a full 30 days of the entire platform for free. Beachbody On Demand. Text Rob to 303030. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to bring in our voicemail guest today. That he is somebody that I had not podcast with for a while since we did the voicemails last season. I think when Figgy got voted out. But here we are again for the third time this week. I am so excited to be back podcasting so much with this man, Antonio Mazzaro.
Rob, how are you? Oh my gosh, Figgy, what memories. It was such a simpler time then. it was much easier things to deal with Figgy leaving. That was celebratory, and this is certainly not the same tone at all. But yeah, all those halcyon days, Rob, the salad days of our podcasting together.
The world made so much more sense back then when Figgy and Taylor were, and Figgy was mad, remember?
Yes. Oh, there. Listen, Survivor is fraught with controversy over the last several seasons.
Yeah, the Survivor controversies were so much more innocent then.
Yeah, this is, the world's a different place, Rob. Here we are.
Yeah. All right. Well, Antonio, you and I podcast this past Monday night. We talked about the Better Call Saul season 3 premiere. We did a Better Call Saul feedback show. We'll be back talking Better Call Saul on post-show recaps this next week. And then you're going to be back getting into The Leftovers with Josh Wigler.
That is correct. By the time this podcast posts, we'll have recorded or posted a preview of season 3, the final season of The Leftovers. Fantastic show. I don't know how Leftovers are 3 years in, but we'll find out. And yeah, Better Call Saul, Rob. It's back. It is leaning heavily into the Breaking Bad territory. If you're a fan of Breaking Bad and haven't watched Better Call Saul, I think now's a great time to start. You can watch the first two seasons on Netflix and catch up with this season. We're getting right into the Breaking Bad universe. So very excited to be talking about those things with you. But I'm also honored, honestly, to be here on a week like this where there's a lot to unpack. And I think that the stuff that happened on last night's episode invites a lot of different discussion surrounding the events and surrounding the impact on the game. And I'm hopeful that the voicemail questions will cover a lot of different elements of that, because I thought you and Steven did a fantastic job covering what you needed to cover in the moment, in the immediate aftermath of the episode. Really looking forward to the Hannah podcast and the responses that gets as of this recording. I don't think that's out there. And I'm looking forward to talking about whatever the people who have called in, Rob, want to talk about with this episode last night.
Okay, good. Well, I'd love to get your take on everything. Going back to the episode last night, did you have anything that you wanted to say about this that you feel like that we have not covered in any of our podcast conversations so far?
I don't have a particularly unique take or voice on this. There's so much in this that we don't know, so many things that are rightly personal about the people that are involved on every side of this. We saw some of it, like Sarah Lucina talking about her experience and background, but we don't know the experience and background of Jeff Varner, for example, and rightly so. Your personal story is personal, and you can talk to people about that or bring it to the table in the context of the game if you choose, but we don't know that. And as a result, I find it very difficult to place a lot of judgment one way or the other in terms of motivation. I really don't know. And I think I leave that to the people that were involved to have a more accurate representation. What I will say is compassion and empathy are the fundamental guiding posts of my life. They are how I make decisions. It guides things that I do. Compassion and empathy are very important to me. And I'm struggling to have those feelings for someone like Jeff, knowing full well that he wasn't the victim. He was the aggressor and the perpetrator here. But he's a human being with his own personal story that I don't know about. I don't know what motivated Jeff. And I think Ozzy said it best, like, you should be ashamed that you're willing to do this, to get to this level. And that is true. I'm sure that he should be ashamed that he's willing to do that and to get to that level. But Jeff Varner didn't just emerge at that tribal council. Whatever happened to Jeff in his life led him to the point where he was willing to do that. And without saying too much in terms of defending him, I'll just say there's more than one human being involved here, and we're all broken, man. Like, we all make mistakes. We all have problems. We all have things that we deal with and maybe we don't even realize. And we don't all put those on an island being filmed all the time and not eating and being tired. And I'm not defending or excusing anything that went on. I'm just really bummed out about the whole situation, to be honest with you, because I know there are human beings involved at every level of it. And it's the human condition in situations like this can be so devastatingly real and brutal. And to see that play out in a TV show that I love, I'm not used, Rob, to turning into like my favorite TV show and seeing like bias incidents and horrible things like that happen. But
only when you're binging The Leftovers, right, Antonio?
Exactly. Like survive. I shouldn't need escapism from my escapism, Rob. Like we, this shouldn't right. be where we're at with this. And yet it is. But the thing about Survivor is it's always been a slice or a cross section of society. And this is something that is happening across the world with people. And these, hopefully the people that are watching this or the people that maybe don't have the information or don't understand some of these things have taken the opportunity, like you and Steven providing the links like or reading Zeke's story and the links that were provided there and all the information that people have. This is an opportunity to have a discussion. There are very dark things about it, but that doesn't mean it has to end in a dark place. And I'm hopeful that going forward, people can find value in this. And Survivor, if it does anything, gives us the opportunity to have those discussions sometimes. And here we are. This is a big one, and it's certainly a hot button. And I just feel terrible for everyone involved, really, more than anything.
Antonio, did your feelings on anything change after my exit interview with Jeff from Thursday morning?
Not really. I mean, you could tell in the moment that he was crushed, right? Like that he was, even in the moment, like his final words, he's just bawling as he's in his confessional after he's been summarily voted out or just asked to leave the game ultimately. You could tell the man was really crushed. I don't know. You could say that it's premeditated, and I'm sure that it was. He went into that tribal council thinking about doing this.
He did say with me in the exit interview that it was not.
That's fine. That's not how CBS portrayed it. And the exact quote from him is, "I feel like I know something about Zeke that no one else has picked up on. It's insignificant to this game. It means nothing. This is not the guy you think he is. There's something else here. If I have to go to tribal tonight and raise mortal hell, I'm going to do it."
And so I don't disagree with you, by the way. I'm just telling you, in his exit interview with me, he did say that it was something that just came up and was not something he was planning to do.
And I get that. And what I would say is, whether or not he was planning to do it, I'm not sure he fully comprehended the reality of the situation. And you can assign him the blame of premeditating this without assigning him the knowledge of the impact that it would have. The fact is, I don't know that he didn't know that Zeke didn't tell people in his life, or that this is something that was so guarded. I think Jeff maybe did think this was guarded only from the people in that tribe. And I think he saw it as a game move and didn't think through the consequences. What I'll say is, I really don't think that there is a world where Jeff Varner thought about this situation, thought, you know what, I'll take the heat, and put himself in the position he's in now. It's a terrible position to be in. The heat that he's taking is not heat I don't think anyone would invite, especially when it was unlikely to work. It was a desperate chance. And even if he did know, like even if he thought through and thought, I can take that heat, you have to think about like what has happened in his life that he's more willing to take that heat and he's willing to line up for that in order to have just three more days on the island. Like what has brought him to this place that he's willing to sink to that level? And that's where the empathy comes in. And that's where the pity comes in. And you start to feel for him as a human being if he's willing to do that. Either way, he went in with that in his mind. I don't know that he thought it through. And here we are. He has to live with the consequences of his actions. And it's up to us, I think, to form our own opinion. So my opinion didn't really change after that exit interview. I already found a lot of pity in him as a human being. And it's easier for me because I'm not Zeke. I'm not a friend of Zeke's. I'm not somebody who was on that tribe. It's not something where I have any personal connection and want to make myself part of this story. So it's easier for me to see pity no matter what the scenario was for Varner. But it's a lot harder, I think, when you're in the moment. And I certainly don't begrudge anybody for wanting to carry an axe against Varner, especially if they were involved in that scenario. I just, for me, it's not what I do. But it's a lot easier, like I said, for me to sit back and say that because I wasn't involved. But no matter his motivation, I have pity on him as a fellow human being. And I know that if he got to that position where he felt like he needed to do that, there's a lot that's gone on in his life that I'm sure in the aftermath of this incident that he's worked through and has thought about a lot and hopefully will emerge a better person on the other end of it.
Okay, I want to start getting into some of the voicemails. We did get a lot of calls on this. I'm not going to focus this entire show on this incident, but we do have a few things that we haven't necessarily talked through and things I want to get your take on. So I want to start with a call from Annika, who is calling all the way from Tasmania, who wants to talk about how this was depicted on the show.
Hi, Rob. It's Annika from Tasmania, Australia. As a member of the LGBTQ community, I'm completely shocked and quite emotional, to be honest, about the episode tonight. The thing that's been weighing most heavily on my mind is, would the Survivor producers and editors have checked with Zeke first before airing this scene? Or is everything filmed on Survivor fair game? I'm a huge fan of the podcast. Thank you for answering my question. Bye.
Antonio, this is something that I've seen a lot on social media. I've seen fans say this. I've seen different survivors say this, who say, hey, Jeff Varner didn't out Zeke. Survivor outed Zeke because they had a choice to show this or not. And they were the ones who did this. They need to be held accountable to that to some degree. And I've said that I don't think that that is necessarily how I would view the situation. And today, Zeke was able to go out there and he himself was able to do some press. And he appeared on The Talk, one of your favorite shows, Antonio, right?
I'm a big fan of Julie Chanarop.
Big fan.
See the cardboard stand up in the room I'm in right now, a giant Julie Chen. It's a Chenbot statue, really, is what it is.
Okay. Well, here is Zeke talking about how he felt about this episode airing from The Talk today.
How did you feel about the fact that that part of Tribal Council was left in the broadcast last night? Did you ever ask Jeff Probst or producers or CBS to not put it on the airwaves?
Well, I love Survivor, and I was drawn to apply for Survivor because of the integrity and the storytelling. Mm-hmm. And when I first applied, I didn't tell casting that I was trans. That was developed later in our relationship. And I had a chat with Jeff Probst in which we agreed if, how, and when I'm going to talk about this part of my life, it's going to be up to me. Right. I suppose being outed by a fellow contestant being the exception. Right. But in the aftermath of being outed, I've been granted like unprecedented autonomy in how I wanted to tell my story. We started having conversations all the way back in Fiji 9 months ago about the care with which this episode was going to be handled. I came to Jeff and asked if I could write a personal essay about what happened, and he immediately said yes. Mm-hmm. And I was really proud of how I responded. And I wanted the world to see how much I'd grown. And I also thought by showing what happened, maybe it wouldn't happen to someone else and something good could come of it.
Yeah.
So Zeke wanted the episode to air.
Yeah, that seems to put any concerns that people might have about this situation to bed. There was, in Zeke's great piece that he wrote for The Hollywood Reporter that he talks about there, the personal essay, he talks about, and it's mentioned in multiple places, how after everything went down, they worked with GLAAD and they worked with CBS. Everybody worked together to combat and get in front of what was going to be the result of this. And I think that ultimately that's all you can ask for if you're going to air the thing. I think the key words Zeke uses there, which, by the way, Zeke is incredible. He's the man. Like, I absolutely love Zeke and I love having him on Survivor. I think that him and players like him on Survivor make the seasons so much better, so much better. And I won't get into my hottest take. I won't say it, but I'd love to see Zeke on a season with everyone's beloved, Kim Spradlin, because the things that make Kim so dangerous, a player like Zeke recognizes immediately as a problem, and maybe she doesn't easily sail through the game. So I love having people with Zeke's respect and love for Survivor on Survivor. He's phenomenal. He's one of the best characters they've had in several years in terms of everything that was before last night. Just the story that they've told with Zeke in the moments. Now, when you look back on them with his family, for example, that are much more meaningful. The integrity of the storytelling is very important on Survivor. I think we watch the show hoping that we're getting a representation of what has happened or what happened on the show. And so I think from that standpoint, Zeke saying it is amazing because that is exactly what, when you pivot back to this, it's a show. It happened. It absolutely went down. To pretend that it didn't would be getting away from the integrity of the storytelling. So I understand the concerns about why did CBS air this or did they have to air this or did they out him? I think the concerns are a little misplaced. I think you can say, well, anyone who heard Jeff Varner saying what he said in confessional about how I'm going to tribal tonight, I know something about Zeke that might come out. Maybe that's butchered with the edit. I don't know. But that's where I think you can point the finger. As far as airing it at all, I think the integrity of the storytelling is very important. I think Zeke is right to focus on that. I think Survivor without that isn't Survivor. And I'm glad in that respect that we at least saw what happened and we didn't cover it up.
If Zeke is ultimately happy with the episode, like, I don't know what place it is for other people to question whether or not it should be airing, if he's okay with it.
Yeah, Zeke is the ultimate person involved here. And if he is, it seems very clear that CBS worked a lot with him and gave him what he needed to in terms of making this a better situation than it would be if they didn't work with him. So he's the one, I think, who has the agency or the standing, as we would say, in a legal perspective to actually truly be the most offended with this. And he seems to look at the situation and say, let's make the best of it that we can, and we can do good with this. And I don't want to deny him that. So I certainly think his opinion is the one we should be most concerned with here. Not to deny anyone else their opinion, but if Zeke's okay with it, I'm okay with it.
Let's take a question now from Sam, who wants to talk at least about the first part of Jeff's plan from Tribal Council to take out Ozzy.
Hey, Robin, Antonio, it's Sam from Scarborough. I want to go back a couple seconds before Jeff's outburst about Zeke. Do you think that Jeff's plan would have actually worked of getting out Ozzy if he didn't bring up Zeke's past? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Antonio, how do you think things were going before the car went completely off the road?
I think Varner was going home. I do think that. That said, of the myriad downsides that are related to the game, specifically of what happened last night at Tribal, the worst part is I think he was going down before he made an ass out of himself and before he did what he did. He was going down with dignity. He went down swinging. You saw him go back to camp and immediately go to work. You saw him ultimately say, this is what's going to happen. Like, I'm finding cracks. I'm realizing that there's this secret alliance with Ozzy and Zeke. And he picked up on the fact that Zeke did not want to get rid of Ozzy. And he picked up on the fact that I can try to use that to get information from Sarah and Andrea or to get them in a position where they might flip. What he didn't realize was what we saw as soon as Jeff gets back to camp and says, well, I want my one-on-one time, and he walks away with Ozzy. Sarah is like, we should get rid of Ozzy. I don't trust this. And Andrea says, I'm on the fence. So I don't think Andrea was really on the fence. I think she's playing it closer to the vest. But I do think that Varner recognized, like, there's some cracks here. I'm going to try to get at them. And I think that if he goes home ultimately with dignity if he doesn't do what he does. I don't think anyone would look at that game and say, oh, Jeff lost Survivor, except for maybe David Bloomberg, Rob.
But I don't think we'll see what he says on Tuesday.
I don't think anyone would look at that. Jeff got swapped into a tribe, was in the minority, exposed cracks, and tried to work his way in, couldn't get there, didn't have enough time. I don't know what the scenario is, but I would not have looked at Jeff's game. And I don't think anyone could fairly have looked at Jeff's game and said, wow, what a flop. Like, what a failure. I know he didn't make the jury his third time. He got into a bad situation, tried to claw his way out, and then at some point, he just reached a point where he was flailing so wildly that he crossed a line, and he crossed the line with something that he is on tape saying he was thinking about before. So this is a bad exit for Jeff, but before that, I think that he tried, but he still would have been going home. Like, I sense that Zeke and Andrea and Ty and look, last week we had Ty saying in the middle of Tribal Council, like, maybe Ozzy, like, maybe we should vote for Ozzy. They get back to camp and they joke about it. Like, it's not a huge deal. We never see Ozzy saying, I'm really nervous about Ty. What's going on? So I think the bonds on that strong with that or on that that tribe with that group are pretty strong. And I don't think Jeff had any shot at cracking them. I think he knew that. And I think we saw ultimately where his desperation took him in one of his darkest hours as a human being. And I think that desperation was because he knew he was going home. I think that was a done deal.
But Antonio, that we should all vote out Ozzy, is that a little basic in terms of the strategy? What if the approach was, and I don't know, maybe based on where it ended up going, we should just assume naturally that he did try everything before he got to what his ultimate plan was?
Let's hope so.
But doesn't it make some sense in terms of let's get rid of Debbie. She's such a wild card. Who knows where her head is at? I have connections. If you're looking for somebody to be just a number, she is going to flip back. Again, I don't know how, if this group is looking at sort of like an NWO red, NWO black situation between the former Nuku tribe, where it's like, is it going to be Ozzy's people versus Brad's people after the merge? In that case, Debbie might be a good number for them if she hates Brad Culpepper. But that being said, like, at least she was spending time with that group over there, with Brad and Sierra and Haley. Maybe they think that she might have some allegiance to them. Could Jeff have maybe got Debbie to be the person voted out instead of going for Ozzy, who he himself found out has an alliance with Zeke, and also talked about that he realized that that alliance was Ozzy, Zeke, Andrea?
I don't know if it's fantasy booking. We know more about Debbie than many of them do. Obviously, not only do we know about
and
her,
Debbie hadn't been with that group from the last 3 days.
And you would think, and this is something I was ranting to anyone who would listen before that I don't love these situations where you send someone to exile, because either you end up sending someone that you want to throw the challenge and get them on your tribe because they're one of your reliable numbers and you don't want to see them go on the other tribe, or you send somebody that you don't want and you're going to send somebody home to replace this person. And then when they come into the game, there's going to be a lot of incentive to just vote them right out. Like, there aren't too many great scenarios that come with these exile swaps. I understand the desire is to make the TV of Julia Sokolowski suffering or Debbie reveling on a yacht with Cochran. Like, I get the reason why we're doing it. I just don't think they add a ton to the game. I think most of what they do for the game is bad. And so I don't know why they wouldn't just send Debbie right out on the street right away, just packing. But I get that the things that are happening in this game seem to be a lot of smoke and mirrors or a lot of sound and fury. And they don't ultimately signify anything because people are going home who are just in the minority or who aren't in the numbers. And that seems to be the case. I mean, the fake out last week with Sandra and Ty was one of the all timers in that regard, because Ty had the idols and he was paranoid, and then Ozzy's name got brought into the mix and there was this huge blow up at Tribal Council and all of these things are happening, and then they just stick together and even Ty votes for Sandra. Like, it just felt like it was a lot of bluster, and it wasn't really any that Sandra was always going to be going home.
To make the football analogy in honor of Brad Culpepper, a lot of times it's like you have, okay, let's line up four wide receivers on one side, have a guy run in motion, and then let's fake the reverse handoff, and then it's just like, you know, a 2 yard run up the middle.
Yeah, it's just all of, like I said, it's sound and
a lot
fury
of window dressing.
Nothing. Window dressing, right. It's a lot, and they're making a TV show where, if you have these votes that are clear and the alliance is strong and they go to Tribal Council with their plan in place and they're not going to budge, you still have to make a TV show where there is drama in the vote. And to Survivor's credit, they do a good job with that most of the time. They don't do a great job building drama in the immunity challenges sometimes, when you see before immunity a lot of information about one tribe and barely anything about another. It seems clear in those scenarios who's going to tribal, especially when it's all strategy on one side and no strategy on the other. But I think they do a good job with these tribal council fake outs a lot of the time. Sometimes you even lose track of the math. Like, they make somebody seem like the very important swing vote, and if they don't vote a certain way, then so-and-so might go home, when the numbers could go with or without the person. Like, they do a really good job of those things. And I feel like, in a scenario like this, it's just that all goes out the window when Jeff Varner does what he does. But I feel like without that, it's a very clear, they even went to the lengths they went to set up Ozzy as a potential boot. They had Sarah Lucina on the fence. They had Andrea pretending not to be happy about what was going on. They haven't really revealed the Andrea, Zeke, Ozzy 3 alliance yet in the context of the game. That's people talking about it who have left the game or whatever. That just not, I don't think, been made entirely clear on screen. So we as an audience don't know that. And we think Andrea and Sarah might be so offended by finding out that Zeke and Ozzy are together that maybe they will flip on Ozzy. But once we get to tribal, it's all out the window, because Jeff just goes Like, he goes completely galactic. He just goes to a place that nobody can even really comprehend that he's doing. And I think he only does that, as you're saying, because he's gone through these other things. He's gone through these other options or permutations. And this, he thinks, is his best shot. So that ought to tell you about the quality of the other shots he had here. He had to have tried with Debbie. It just must have been a non-starter.
Okay, let's go ahead and take this question. One more question about the exit of Jeff Varner. This is from Lawson.
Hey, Robin, Antonio. This is Lawson calling. So I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of discussion about last night's tribal council. And I, just on a lighter note, wondered, what did you think about Varner taking a pizza box home? What's up with that?
You know, it took me a couple of times to watching this to understand, like, what is Jeff holding in his hand? And then I realized that he's taking the top of one of the pizza boxes home with him.
Not the whole box, just the top?
It looks like the top part that said Game Changers on the Game Changers logo, which I guess, you know, he took it to Tribal Council. And again, in his mind, I don't think he thought everything was going to go as poorly as it did. But it did seem like that's a weird souvenir to be taking out at that point.
Fair point. I thought maybe he was just trying to take out the leftovers, Rob.
Yes.
Sorry. That was if anyone's cringing while they're. Yeah, that was a slight plug. Yeah, just a little bit of on brand podcasting there. But no, I don't know that detail. Honestly, I know. And I thank Lawson for trying to bring some levity into this and look for the lighter notes here. It again just makes me like bone crushingly sad to think of. I see him as a young person in that moment. Like it's a souvenir. It's something that he'll cherish or remember. And you think of that in the moment, like everything that went down, like, and it doesn't seem that things are great right now. So it's really just depressing and kind of soul crushing that he thought, unless he was taking out the trash or unless he had written like a homeless person sign on the other side of that.
I feel like he could leave the pizza box in that moment.
You don't want that to be with you when you're walking out. It's just sad. It's just depressing. It's not, there isn't anything good happening there.
Right. Just to talk about the pizza box itself, what did you think about that touch of the Survivor pizzas delivered in special commemorative Game Changer pizza boxes? Was that like a product placement that just never materialized of Papa John, get your Game Changer pizza box?
That I have a no Papa John rule in my life, Rob, but I might stoop so low as to give the Papa a call on that one if they were serving up Survivor pizza boxes. Not Survivor pizza. I think that's the other part of the story. Survivor pizza is just so gross. Now they're putting it in a box to cover up how gross it really is.
Oh, is and that it? Yeah. Pizza's so gross. If they just serve it in boxes, then people won't be as grossed out.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, look what their mouth is drooling over the boxes of pizza, not the pizza itself. Like Jeff is telling them what's in those boxes. But yeah, it's like the anticipation of Christmas Eve or before you've opened your presents. The boxes are sometimes better than what is inside them. The imagination is better. And I think with the Survivor pizza, it's like you're already hungry. So rather than have your eyes spoil this for you, we're going to put it in a nice decorative box. And we're not going to show you everything that you're about to be grossed out by when you eat it.
In honor of Josh Wiggler, you want to talk some more about pizza?
I always.
Here's Emmeline.
Hey, Rob. This is Emmeline from Arlington, Virginia. Here's a question for you. When they have food like pizza for the reward challenge, where does it come from? Is there a Survivor chef? Is it DiGiorno? Does Domino's deliver there? And how do they keep it warm? Thanks for taking my call. Bye.
Yeah, I think that they're going to make those pizzas. I don't think that's a DiGiorno.
No, it's not for restaurant taste at your place. Like, that is... it's a Fijian pizza, and maybe a Fijian pizza is not made to our taste. I've had pizza in different countries. It doesn't always taste how we expect it to, because guess what? It's not for me. It's for the people who live there and whose taste buds are different. When I've had Indian friends visit the U.S., the food is so bland. Why is everything so bland? And I'll say, oh, let's go to a flavorful place like, I don't know, Chipotle. No, bland. Everything is bland in America compared to what they want, and I'm sure Fijian pizza is made with different tastes in mind. And then you have all the other problems that are mentioned there. How far is it? How long does it sit out in that blistering sun? Like, at what point do we need to medevac the pizza and say it's time to replace you and remove you from this game? Everything goes into this, and none of it is a good solution. I've yet to see a slice of Survivor pizza where I'm like, oh, that looks so delectable. But you, Rob, what do you know about Survivor pizza? What can you weigh in? Is there a Survivor chef? Can we cross over with Top Chef, please, Rob?
Yeah, sure. I think that maybe if we can get Jonas back in the mix. You know, Tyson always tells me that he's like, no, dude, the pizza got good on Survivor. They must have changed the chef. But I don't know. It looks like that we might have taken one step forward, but two steps back, because that looked like some of the worst Survivor pizza since Steven, JT, and Coach were eating pizza in the rain in token sheens.
It looks like pizza that is actually roadkill. Like you put regular pizza on the ground and something ran over it and then left it sit for a while. Like that's what it looks like to me. It does not look delectable or delicious. And to be fair to Survivor, a lot of the time the food does look like that. The food looks incredible. A lot of the time it looks mouthwatering. The pizza, for whatever reason, they just haven't nailed it. It just doesn't look great.
Antonio, I've got a question from Taylor, and he wants to know about the timeline.
Hey, Rob, this is Taylor from Indiana. My question to you is, now that the pre-merge section is over and all of the big characters that we were rooting for, such as Malcolm, Sandra, Tony, JT, are gone, my question is, are we in the darkest timeline of Survivor Game Changers?
Antonio, last week, I think after Sandra went out, people were wondering, could things get any worse? This week...
Yep. Yep.
That question was indeed answered. Is this the darkest timeline?
It's funny. Last time we podcasted, I think we had different questions about Taylor and timelines. So
yes.
Here we are answering
these.
We
had a different Taylor timeline.
Yeah. No. So this is I'm stroking my black goatee and wondering where one of my arms is as we speak, Rob. This is a difficult timeline we're in here. And I think that we had reason to expect some of this. We've seen other All-Star seasons. Rob, I don't know if you know this, but in All-Star seasons, some of the great players go out very early, like pre-merge boots a lot of the time. Like the best players that we've seen in the history of the game sometimes go out pre-merge on an All-Star season.
And sometimes we have sort of like an ugly controversy right around the area right before the merge.
Yeah, all of this has happened before. All of it will happen again.
Yeah.
But nothing to this degree. This is the darkest timeline we've seen in a very, very, very long time with regard to Survivor. I don't mean to make light of it. I just mean to say this is, in terms of the people that are being eliminated, this should not come as a surprise to any of us who have watched previous seasons, where the players who come into the game with great success from their previous seasons often have a huge target on their backs as a result. And it is, I think, why we like these seasons, because sometimes people can still emerge through the muck. Someone like a Sandra, I think that we could look very much at what Aubrey's doing this game and saying she has been tossed aside, tossed back and forth, and she should have come into this game with a huge target on her back, considering when her season aired versus when this one was filmed, and yet here she is. So kudos to her for sticking her head above water and treading and doing what she's doing to find her place in this game. But yeah, this is an All-Star season, Rob. This is what happens to a certain extent. We have seen this happen before. I'm sure in the future on All-Star seasons, we'll see it happen again. That said, like, I'm not sure. I don't want to single anyone out for who the darkest timeline winner would be. I leave that to everyone's imaginations to fill in who they think it would be. I will say there are plenty of players left in the game who fit that description. But Caleb did already get sent home, so mine's gone.
Okay. So, Antonio, you know, we've been talking a lot about the incident from last night and also a little bit about pizza. But I do start to want to look forward a bit into what is to come now that the pre-merge is over. Josh Spence sent me a tweet today to both of us. He said, a suggestion for voicemails, focus on Zeke's uplifting display. Check.
Yes. Okay. Check. Zeke is incredible.
And the merge dynamics speculation. So, Antonio, let's start to take a look at what is to come as this 13-person merge is on the horizon. And I think that it's a pretty interesting one in that we have so many people from the original Nuku, and then we have some people from Mana sort of interspersed throughout.
I hope we're not in a scenario where we just, and I don't think we are. I think we saw the interesting alliance emerge last night that included Aubrey and Suri with Brad Culpepper and everything that's happening there. That seems to be the room where it happens, if you will. That seems to be the locus of a lot of what we might look forward to in this game. We have so many advantages and idols in play, Rob. We have Sarah Lucina wanting to shake things up seemingly with every vote. We have some dangerous players left in the game in terms of survivor bombs like Ty. And we don't know when the grenades are going to get pulled on those pins, but they will. We've got Debbie running around like a Tasmanian devil. Shout out to Annika. And yeah, there's just a lot in play here. And it's really unfortunate that there's such darkness. And I understand the desires I've heard from a lot of people to focus on where we go from here game wise, because there are a lot of interesting game mechanics in play and a lot of interesting players in play. And other than saying the word interesting again, I think it will be fascinating to watch all of those play out. Are you flagging anything in particular? My heart is with Suri, and I'm really hoping that Suri or Aubrey are the two players I would love to see emerge. I think Zeke has done a great job, and I also am fascinated to see how that will play out, because that tribe has just not – Suri hasn't even been to tribal council, Rob. Like, there's so many dynamics that are in play here. But there are a few players I'd like to see emerge from all of this. I'm wondering if you're flagging anything as like, this is the player to watch coming into the merge.
No, I really don't know who's going to be that's that person to watch. I mean, I'm looking at this as sort of like a cold war between Ozzy and Brad Culpepper. I think that those seem to be the two factions where if we take a look at who's aligned with who, you have Ozzy who has Zeke, potentially Andrea and Sarah, and Debbie and Ty, I think, are sort of the swings between them. Well, obviously, Debbie is anti-Brad Culpepper, but Brad Culpepper has very quietly, he still has Sierra Dawn Thomas. Suri and Aubrey seem to be with him. And obviously, Troyzan is with Brad Culpepper. And then you have a couple of wild cards there in Michaela and Haley. Will we end up seeing a pagonging where mana people go home in these first couple of votes while things start to percolate, or will it be sort of a scramble for those pawns, and then the two sides who were basically half of Nuku, will they end up being divided?
I think that you're looking at big game season, as you pointed out. The question is, are people willing to pull the trigger at the merge? If you're talking about a merge boot, there's some big game left, and Ozzy is a big one. Obviously, Suri is a big one in terms of those huge, huge targets for different reasons, clearly. But they're in the game there, and we're approaching the merge. And you're right. We're looking at Sharks and Jets here. Like, we're looking at a face-off between two groups.
Bet against the Jets. Trust me, Antonio.
I trust you on that one, Rob. I 100% trust you on that one. Little known fact, we were discussing Chad Pennington before this podcast started. But yeah, I don't know ultimately. I mean, if it's me, I feel like you're looking at, if you're talking about a cold war between Brad and Ozzy, I feel like it's about to heat up. I feel like if you're going into the merge, that's a perfect time to just cut Ozzy completely out of the mix. But why would you go and say, oh, let's get Michaela out at this point, or let's get Haley Ford out at this point? I just don't see the real value in that, especially not when Brad's been working with these people and they're precious little people left. Haley might have wanted to work with Sandra, but who's left in that group now? It's just Michaela, and she's floating free. So why not try to bring her in and use her against somebody else rather than let them do it? So I see folding pawns in rather than targeting pawns. I just don't see these groups ultimately working together to target these pawns. Do you have a different take on this?
Well, what I'd like to do is, we've sort of like set the stage for the big picture, and then I have some voicemail questions that key in on some specific players and factions. So why don't we start with this question from Andrew Kirk, who wants to talk about Ozzy.
Hey, Robin, Antonio, this is Andrew Kirk calling from California. Got one quick question about Rob's winner pick, Ozzy. Do you guys feel like he's in a good spot going into this merge? And if so, do you guys feel like he can make a deep run, possibly win this game? Well, have you guys thoughts on that? Thanks, guys.
So you certainly make the case for Ozzy as the merge boot, somebody to watch if he's going to go home because of his challenge prowess. But does he have enough insulation around him where he can protect himself against it? Or are there enough people out there that say, hey, Ozzy's going to block me from winning the challenges? I guess it makes sense. If he has Zeke, if he has Andrea, Sarah, you would think would be more aligned with him than with Brad Culpepper. Basically, like all of these people that have been with Ozzy for basically since day six, they have no loyalty to Ozzy, you don't think?
The part that I get in trouble with is you're talking about people like Suri, who maybe had some loyalty to Ozzy before, but there was a loose...
No, I've got her with Brad. I think that she is completely team Brad in the battle of Ozzy versus Brad.
Yeah, so if in the battle of Ozzy versus Brad, what, this is not the Bastard Bowl, what would it be? I don't know what the name of this battle would be, Rob. We need some Game of Thrones knowledge here, but yeah, if you call it a Cold War, I don't know what we're dealing with here. But the Battle of Ozzy versus Brad, ultimately, you said Zeke, Andrea, and I think Sarah are on Team Ozzy. Debbie will not be on Team Brad Culpepper. So there you go right there. But then what happens with Ty? And where does Ty end up? And who ultimately does Ty work with? If you've got Aubrey on the other side with Brad and
that's
Sierra
interesting.
And Suri, then there's a natural, this is the scenario that Debbie's been so worried about from the beginning of the game. And that Sandra was worried about, that others have pointed out, that this is the Korong connection, right? So you've got Aubrey, the Ty Whisperer, if you will, who can work with Ty and maybe bring him into that fold. Then you've got six against five. And then what happens with Haley and Michaela? Is there any incentive for Haley not to work with them? Does she float around? Does Michaela float around? Does Troyzan's idol come into play if that's the group?
I don't think so much Troyzan's idol, but I do think that Troyzan is the person that from the original Mana that might have the connection to Haley and Michaela. There's nobody from this group of Ozzy, Zeke, Andrea, Sarah. Yes, Debbie was with Haley, but I don't think she really liked Haley. Where Troyzan, he was the one, he was in that alliance with Sandra, and he has that bond, I think, with Haley and potentially with Michaela from back when they were all on the same side voting out Tony and Sierra way back when.
Right, and we know that Troyzan has a friendship with Sierra Dawn Thomas. That's something that we we've talked about, it's been talked about in these podcasts, like there's the alleged pregame relationship alliance there. And so if there's a pregame alliance with Troyzan and Sierra and the game relationship with Troyzan and Haley or Michaela to an extent, then here we are. We're in a situation where the five are in trouble, if you want to call them the five. The part of it that I've seen people talking about, and I don't know to what extent this plays a part, is how horrible the events we saw last night. Do they galvanize those six? Do they bring them closer together to the point where they're a very, very, very strong six? And then they maybe only need to bring in one person.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, Antonio. That let me play another voicemail for you. This is from Kelly from Melbourne.
My hometown, Kentucky.
Hi, this is Kelly from Melbourne. So my question after this really powerful episode is that with such an intense and emotional shared experience by these six players, do we think that they could be so emotionally connected on a level that's really now beyond the game that they will stay together and make a run of this and take this alliance all the way to the final six? I would love to hear your thoughts.
Antonio, you mentioned it. Could this be something that sort of really galvanizes this group? Ozzy, Zeke, Andrea, Sarah, Debbie and Ty. I think that Ty is the one that I think you might be worried about, but going through this trauma together, do you think that it is an experience that could unite this group?
Sure, absolutely. 100%. I think that Kelly and I have this Melbourne mind meld going on because that is my hometown in Kentucky. And I thought about it. I mean, we brought it up here. It's something to consider. And I can't speak. I wasn't there, but it certainly seems like the kind of thing that could do that. Whether it's I was like everyone else, very impressed with the way that everyone at that tribal responded in the moment and throughout. I know it was a long process through the tribal council that we saw edited down But we saw something from every one of those people that made it personal to them, that Debbie was offended personally, that Ozzy was offended, that Andrea got really upset, that Ty got upset, that Sarah Lucina came and put herself into the middle by talking about how it directly had impacted her. There's no way that they go back to camp in a world where they're tired and emotionally exhausted, and that doesn't have an impact on them. And that ultimately this is something that happened to Zeke because of horrible actions by Jeff Varner, but in part because Zeke was in an alliance with Ozzy and with Andrea, and that can only strengthen those bonds. They went through another crazy vote where they had to show the strength of their bonds. And so their bonds are already pretty strong in that group. The things that are interesting are, do they supersede the bonds that exist outside that group? Because we've seen Sarah Lucina talking to Troy Zan, for example. And we've seen some of these other players relating to other players. We saw Zeke saying he really likes Ceri, but at the time, it wasn't a good time to work with her, but that he would love to work with Ceri. We didn't see a lot of what was going on with Andrea, for example, because they just weren't going to Tribal. But we have seen some of these people talk about the other people. There are existing bonds that were built. The question is, are the bonds that were built because of the last two Tribals for this tribe something that's more impressive or stronger than these previous bonds, or where does that come into play? And I think that's what you're always looking for with a merge, especially in a season where you started with the tribes you started with and you went to three, the mitosis, the meiosis, everything that happened, and the expanding and the contracting. You've built these relationships and you hope to trade on them after the merge. And so I think it's fascinating to see how this will ultimately play out. It's not blood and water, but it is very much questioning which bonds that were formed at which times may be stronger. And are people willing to put those aside when they realize they're in the minority, and who is willing to do that and for what purpose? I think Zeke himself is the kind of person who might be willing to say, oh, this is toast. Like, we're in trouble here. We don't have anybody. I'm going to get myself in with this other group and make sure that I'm on the right side of this vote. I think there are players like that in that group. So anything could really happen here. I find a hard time taking a stance because I think it could easily be that they'd get drawn together. But I don't know. In your experience, Rob, are things that you experience as a tribe rather than just merely vote outs? My thinking is always that the vote outs, the opportunity to display and establish trust with those vote outs, are the things that matter more than just about anything else. And once you've shown that you can be trusted to stick to the plan and to keep things quiet or to work as a group, that's the most important thing that you can do for a person in the game.
Going back to my own Survivor experience in Survivor, the Amazon, I feel like that, you know, certainly night and day from what these guys went through at that tribal council. But, you know, when the camp burned down, I feel like that was a really traumatic experience for all of us because we lost like our clothes and our shelter. And I do feel like that it made us closer as a group for a little bit, but I don't think it was anything that stopped us from playing the game for more, like certainly for the next day or so. But it's an important day if the next day is going to be the merge. So it might be something that gives this group a little bit more of a connection going into that. But for the most part, I mean, Ozzy, Zeke, Andrea, and Sarah, they've been together from day six. I mean, that's already a pretty tight group. Does it bond Debbie to them a little bit more? Perhaps, and maybe Ty, that makes it something that keeps him on that side, even if Aubrey is trying to pull him over. But I think that they were going to be together no matter what.
Yeah, that seems to me to be the case as well. And like I said, they've already established a lot of trust with the last couple of votes where they stayed strong. They voted together. It all worked out. I don't know whether Varner's desperation did expose any issues.
We know that Sarah,
it's a stinky cologne. We saw, and I don't know why we saw it ultimately, but we saw a lot of talk about, we don't know if we can trust Ozzy. I think he might stick with us for one or two more votes, and then we don't know.
Where's he going?
Yeah, I don't know. Where's he going? Right. Is he going to go work with Ceri? Like, is he going to go work with Brad Culpepper? It doesn't seem likely. So I don't know what they have in mind, but it seems like Sarah, in playing like a criminal, is thinking like one. So she's thinking that Ozzy could go at any moment. And if she's already on the fence about Ozzie and kind of wanted to put his name out there as a target and did so in an open session when Ozzie and Jeff weren't there right after they got back to camp, then maybe Sarah will not be so likely to stick together with Ozzie. And I think what happened at that tribal could be very telling. Maybe they will all stick together and you'll say, wow, she was ready to ditch him, but that really did bring them closer together. I think it remains to be seen ultimately. And it's not like at a final five situation or whatever when the camp is burning down. This is a merge boot, like you said. So there are so many other dynamics in play as well.
Let me throw one thing out there in Ozzie's favor. If anybody was ever set up to go on an immunity run, I think it has to be Ozzie in this season. Now, I know we're merging at 13. That's a lot of people to get down to three. I don't know if he can rattle off 10 in a row. But who's Ozzie's biggest competition in these challenges? Is it Brad Culpepper? Is it Andrea? Is it Sarah? I mean, you got to say you like his chances against the field in most of these. He's not going to win 10 in a row, but can he win the first couple and find his footing?
Yeah, he might be able to. Sierra Dawn Thomas also, low-key, decent challenge performer. She's done really well for herself, so there could be some Sierra Dawn Thomas in that as well. But you're right. Generally speaking, Ozzie is ahead of the class, like far and away better as a challenge performer than a lot of these people. That said, what challenges are we going to get? Are there going to be ones that cater to Ozzie specifically? How many puzzles are we going to deal with? How many longer challenges will we have? Will they all be water-based? Will they be balance-based? Will they be things that favor Ozzie? It just remains to be seen. And if they are things where he could strictly dominate throughout, that will clearly favor him. But I have a feeling we're going to see more than one of these situations where it just is not something that caters to the things that he's really good at, and he's going to have a bigger problem. And there are people left who can do really. We know Zeke, for example, is great at the puzzles. And if there's a puzzle in play at any point, that could be a problem for Ozzie. We've seen Aubrey be a pretty fair challenge performer a lot of the time. So there are people who have demonstrated a good ability in these challenges left. And we're also not even mentioning Michaela, who is a challenge beast, totally a challenge beast. And you could easily see Michaela out Ozzie-ing Ozzie at a couple of these things. And it just depends on what the challenges are. So I think there are enough people left that it's not a cakewalk for him. And if I'm him, I would have my social game on lock, and I wouldn't count on winning too many immunities here, for sure.
Why don't we take a look at the original mana four that are left? And Anthony has a question about them.
Anthony!
Rob and Antonio, this is Anthony calling, and I have a question about the original mana four. Can you guys do a power rankings between these four in terms of who's most likely to win the season? Thank you.
Now, the mana four, that's going to be Troyzan, Haley, Michaela, and Aubrey. Now, I think the consensus here is that we think that Nuku big alliance of nine is going to fold itself inward, right? Do you think that there is a possibility that the nine continues to target the four?
How many? Four into nine is what? We should ask Brad Culpepper. There's a reason we talk about the intentional Matt Sang, Rob. It's just that the original Nuku tribe hasn't been tested in the same way and hasn't emerged through and found their way through the social game or had to work. I think the mana tribe members have been picked off such that they're the swing people at this point, and they have been absorbed, as we see with Aubrey, into larger alliances that don't ultimately involve them or didn't involve them from the start of the game. And so I think that because we saw so many, they took so many hits before the merge, that they're in a position now where the people that are left, by and large, I think we don't know ultimately about Haley and Michaela, but certainly Aubrey and Troyzan seem to have worked their way into a good alliance with Nuku members and are going to be working against other original Nuku members. And so I think if you want to power rank who's the safest, my opinion would be that you'd have to say Troyzan, simply because he has an idol and he seems to be in good with Brad. And then Aubrey would be second. My thought would be Haley would be third and Michaela would be fourth. And I'm basing that on the fact that Brad seemed to want to work with Haley. They have worked with Haley. It has happened. She's not completely on that team. We don't know what messages she was ultimately trying to send at the tribal council where Malcolm goes home. But she was questionable, certainly. But I think that if you're talking about her being third versus fourth, I don't have a problem putting her there because of the problems we've seen with Michaela. Michaela's main allies, as we saw, were Varner and Sandra. Both of them are gone. I think that puts her in a little more difficult uphill position than Haley, someone who has worked with Brad in the past. Do you agree with those power rankings, or would you put Aubrey first?
No, I would definitely have Troy Zan first, because I think that he is the tightest with Brad Culpepper, and he also has the idol. Then I would have Aubrey second because of that she is probably the best player of those three, and she also seemed to have won Brad Culpepper over. So I have her at two, but then I would have Michaela at three, and I would have Haley Ford at four. It was just really telling for me that Brad didn't even consider her as an option for that fourth person in the alliance. And then it seems as though Aubrey and Sari both superseded Haley in the power rankings at that new Mana tribe. So I am very concerned about Haley Ford in her placement with the Brad Culpepper group.
Yeah, you're very concerned about this? You're losing a lot of sleep over it, Rob?
I'm being very concerned about her. Whereas I feel like that Michaela, she might be somebody who is just not on Brad's radar, whereas Haley seems to be Brad has like turned up his nose at her.
That is true. I mean, you could say that Brad passed over Michaela to be part of the five as well, just like he did Haley, but he had previously worked with Haley. So,
and where else does she have to go? I mean, I feel like if the group was going to unanimously agree on getting rid of one of these people, I feel like it's going to be Haley or Michaela.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I don't have any problem with flip-flopping them one way or the other. For me, I do think that Haley could be seen as a bigger target or a bigger problem by Brad as well. He could see the budding lawyer, as he put it, and say, she's a threat. We should probably cut her at some point. She's more likely to be able to integrate with some of the people over there than Michaela. He may look at Michaela. I mean, I don't know if you saw, Rob, but when we had their moments of woe, their like tree of misery there, whatever you want to call it, while they're sitting around camp and just being miserable together, Michaela was just lying on the ground, kicking her finger around in the dust when Brad Culpepper was breaking down. She was not having it. She was not emotionally part of that whatsoever. And so it just doesn't, you saw Aubrey use that and Sari use that to build a connection with Brad Culpepper. You saw them use a very real emotional personal moment in the game, and you saw them use that socially to get themselves ahead in the game. We saw Michaela just throwing her sand around and not being interested in it at all. So I think it's a difficult road for both of those two as far as it goes.
But Antonio, those two, they're kingmakers right now. If Haley and Michaela as a trust cluster were able, or a voting block even, if they aligned with Ozzy, then they could take out Brad Culpepper.
If Sarah was not wanting to work with Troy Zan, if Ty doesn't come back over, there are a lot of questions there. But you're right, that could happen. They could both flip over there. And then we have a very different number situation.
I think they could lose Ty, and as long as they got Haley and Michaela, I think they'd still have seven.
Yeah, because you would have Ozzy, Zeke, Andrea, Sarah, and Debbie.
Yeah.
And so adding two more, flipping Ty back over. But then the Sarah Troy Zan thing does come into play. We have seen
How solid is that? That they said, sure, I'd like to work with you. Yeah. And he's like, I'd like to work with you.
Yeah, I don't know why else we saw it. I mean, maybe it was just there to show us that Sarah Lucina's playing the game. But we did see that. It did happen. So if you ascribe to the theory that we saw it because it's going to matter later, it's going to matter at some point. So this might be the point. And that's the only thing I would say, is that that's a possibility at least. And if you're handicapping, if you're picking horses and you're trying to figure out which would come in first, second, or third, you have to evaluate all these things. It's just one factor, but it is a factor, as are idols. Ty has two idols. So if Ty is loyal to Brad and he does flip over, or Aubrey whispers into his ear, like if he tells Aubrey he's got the idols, maybe he gives one to Brad. Like maybe there's an idol in play at this point. We just don't really know. That's the problem with the Survivor bomb, Rob, is you never know when it's going to go off or what damage it's going to do. And I think that's the issue with Ty, is that he could have a major impact in this game because he's holding two idols and he's easily manipulated. So he has a good soul and people take advantage of that. So it'll be interesting to see for sure where this all plays out. But Haley and Michaela could be floating around, or it could be one of those scenarios like Andrea and Sarah are talking about with Ozzy. Brad might say, I'll work with Haley for a couple votes. I'll cut her at 7, but I'll work with her to get rid of some of these other people. Like, she's just not somebody that's going to be in my final 5. So maybe it's not the worst relationship. She's just not in the 5. But she would be in the 7, and that might be her position.
We touched on them a little bit. Let's talk Aubrey and Suri now working with Brad Culpepper. Here is Charlie.
Hey, Rob. This is Charlie from Maryland. I just wanted to know your thoughts on the Aubrey-Brad-Suri alliance. Two women, Aubrey and Suri, who have shown that they're used to aligning with women, are aligning with Brad, who proved himself to align with all alpha men in Blood versus Water. I just want to know... how long do you think this alliance will last? And are you surprised by, you know, these two binary oppositions aligning with each other? Thanks. Bye.
So, Antonio, I'm actually more interested in this from the Troyzan perspective, that we've seen Brad talk about how he likes Aubrey and he really liked that Suri came up to him. Both of them liked his story and he feels like that he can work with this group. We didn't hear anything from Troyzan. Now, I believe that Troyzan and Aubrey did not necessarily see eye to eye back at Mana. Aubrey was a target of the Sandra group way back when. I think that Aubrey is potentially somebody that could have gone home had that Mana tribe stayed together for another tribal council after Tony went out of the game. And sure. I don't know if Troyzan and Suri have a good relationship. We've never seen anything like that before. So do you think that this is going to be one happy family? Brad, Suri, Sierra Dawn Thomas, Aubrey, and Troyzan.
There is a question of like a friend of my friend, enemy of my enemy, all of that in play here, because while you're mentioning factual things that there were issues with Aubrey and maybe Troyzan, or that she was on the outs in that moment, or that we don't know about Suri and Troyzan, we know about Brad and Troyzan. We have heard about Sierra and Troyzan. We know about Brad and Suri. We know about Brad and Aubrey. At some point, you become so entangled with your other allies that these people... I've certainly become your allies just by exclusion of other people. Like your allies, Brad, if you're Troyzan, your ally Brad is working with Sierra, Suri, and Aubrey. If Sierra is working with Suri and Aubrey and you're Troyzan, then your ally Sierra is doing that. So at some point, they're your allies, whether you meant them to be or not. And maybe in Troyzan's mind, Brad, Sierra, and he are the final three, and Suri and Aubrey are who they cut at 5 and 4, and that's fine. And maybe Aubrey and Suri, people who were previously targets or floating around with an alliance, are okay with that, or without an alliance, are okay with that right now and plan to make moves later. But I feel like this feels like an alliance of 5 that makes a lot of sense with the entanglements that all the people have with each other, even if on an individual level, they're not all directly connected. And I think that's but I think the more interesting part of that, and I understand you want to talk about it from Troyzan's perspective. I'm interested, Rob, for you, someone who came into their second appearance with a reputation. Brad Culpepper came in with the reputation, and he came in with such a reputation that in many Survivor drafts, he went undrafted. I think that Dom and Colin, for example, have a draft going with actual money involved, Rob, where Brad Culpepper was not chosen. And if Brad Culpepper wins, all of the money will be donated to charity because no one picked him. And I think that's the case in a lot of these situations.
I believe it came down to me when I drafted with Shireen and Sarah Channon and Akiva, the last two picks on the board were Brad Culpepper and Troyzan. And I was left at number 19 with a pick. I had to choose either one. I went Brad Culpepper over Troyzan at number 19.
Oh, so you want credit for picking Brad Culpepper second to last?
No, I'm just saying that these two people that we're talking about, like in a pretty interesting position, are the last two people on the draft board.
I think that Brad Culpepper came in knowing full well exactly what happened to him last season because of his own problems, because of his own issues. Again, people bring themselves into the game and it causes them to do stuff that they regret and that maybe don't ultimately represent the best version of themselves that they would like to present to the world at all occasions. There are moments of weakness that emerge in this game. It is designed to pull them out of you. And we saw that from Brad his first time out. And I think we're looking at somebody who was contemplative of that, who understood it, who even in this episode says, I didn't really understand what Monica went through when she was here this long. And he's getting a new respect for what it was like the first time and things he didn't even learn that time. So he seems to be has a curious mind. He's a lawyer. So I do think that he has a mind where he's thought about these sorts of things. And I wouldn't have used the words self-aware to describe Brad Culpepper before, but I sense that he's brought some of that into the game with him. And I think that it served him really well. And it, when the question comes up from Charlie about the interesting flip-flops that we've had here, I think you're looking at a Brad Culpepper who really thought about what his first time was like and not overcorrected, which we see a lot of players do, has simply gone out here and tried to be likable. And we've seen the likable side of Brad Culpepper emerge, the antiquing, hanging balls in trees version of Brad Culpepper. And that version seems to be really liked. There's authenticity that we're seeing people talk about, Aubrey talking about in confessional, that he's authentic and that these things are happening. So he seems to be doing really well with this, and he's making the most out of his second chance, Rob.
Speaking of Brad Culpepper, I have one other important question to ask. This is from Owen.
Hey, Rob. Owen from Connecticut here. So we know that Brad is a big fan of antiquing. Do you think that's why his bathing suit looks like it's from the 1970s? Thanks.
I would have said 1920s.
Yeah, I would have said 1870s more than 90s. It's legitimately a bathing suit, like a suit that you would wear while bathing. Like he needs a handlebar mustache and like a shave his head and have one of those barbells that has big balls on either side. We know he's a fan of this, suspended balls, big, like a curved barbell with big balls. And he has like, yeah, he's just a circus strongman. I'm surprised he doesn't have like black and white stripes on it. He's wearing capri pants, Rob. Like, what is going on with Brad Culpepper?
Well, I like that when he got up to leave, he's like, all right, I need to go do my laundry. And he always wears like red jeans on Survivor. And then he's like washing his red jeans, but he's in his 1920s bathing suit to be doing it.
Who is this guy? Who is this guy? This guy played in the NFL, Rob? Like, what's going on with this guy? He is an unusual cat, to say the least. And I don't know. His clothing choices, I don't know. What did Monica buy those? Is he dressed by Monica? Is that what's happening here?
Is that what
it is? She's a neat lady. I mean, she might say, like, do you want to look like you're from the 1920s? It'll be in. Like, at some point, you're going to be considered hip. He looks like he has a fixie bike. Like, that's what those red jeans remind me of. He looks like he'd be living in Williamsburg, just tooling around in a little fixie bike, and he's wearing tight red jean capris. I don't understand Brad Culpepper, Rob.
Well, I do love the idea that he bought his bathing suit at the antique store.
Yeah, that's what he's doing by antiquing. He's actually acquiring not a physical wardrobe, but the wardrobe that he wears.
Yeah.
This is really good.
Somebody needs to grab a screenshot of the Brad Culpepper bathing suit and send it to Antonio and I. It's hard to find, and the photos on the CBS.com website are not up to date from week to week. But I would love to just have that on file, the Brad Culpepper bathing suit.
If you're listening to this and you haven't gone back to look at what Brad Culpepper looked like when he was in the NFL, do yourself a favor. This is an interesting guy. He is a unique individual, and the antiquing is part of it, but he's a memorable guy, even though he had a mostly unmemorable NFL career. Not certainly in the mold of some people that have been on the show who weren't memorable at all. He's a name that you would recognize, but he's not the guy that he was when he was in the NFL. He used to have a crazy look, and that was what was most memorable about him to me, Rob. He's a unique dude.
Yeah, he is a unique dude. One of the other things that we talked about last week with Denise Stapley was, what are Brad Culpepper's tattoos? He has a number of tattoos on like the his like oblique area, and we didn't really know what they were, but that upon further review, that he has a number of symbols that are all sort of symbols that appeared in Survivor Blood versus Water. Like, there were a couple of like unique circle type logos, which were part of the iconography of Survivor Blood versus Water. And then Brad has those tattooed on his side. That's what all of those are. So that was an interesting reveal. And another interesting thing about Brad Culpepper is that when he refers to season 27, he doesn't call it Survivor Blood versus Water.
Yes.
He simply refers to it as Survivor Blood Water.
Yeah, when Monica and I did Blood Water, yeah.
He refers to it that he has taken out the verses and he's made it sort of like a slash. It's like back in Survivor Blood Water, I remember when Tyson won.
It sounds like a ritual. Like, it sounds like a blood water ritual. Like, it sounds like something that he's done to retain his youth.
Yeah. It's almost like that, well, I would never be on a tribe versus Monica. So
no,
I've just combined the two. He's merged blood and water.
It's not blood is thicker than water. It's just blood thicker water. He takes the comparison out of the equation completely.
Yeah.
They're not at odds. They're on the same. Well, Monica and I did Blood Water. Yeah, I've noticed that. And maybe he's not referring to Survivor. Maybe he is referring to some kind of arcane ritual, Rob. I really
oh.
I'm confused. Yeah, like I really don't. He is into antiquing. Like maybe he picked up a mysterious book at one of those antique shops and he found a recipe that involved blood and water. And he and Monica did this and it's brought them closer together and made him a new man, Rob. Maybe that's where we're
at. Yes, and he drank that magic elixir before this season and it changed him.
That's right. Yeah. Blood water. Monica and I did blood water and here we are.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Antonio. So I want to do things a little bit differently this week. I mean, we can delve into the Survivor social media, but I don't think we necessarily need to rehash every single Survivor's opinion from the incident from Wednesday night's Survivor. I think that people can go ahead and just peruse Twitter at their leisure if they wanted to do that. I do have one thing I do want to talk about from the world of survivors on the internet. So let me cue up what Ryan Elder put together for this week.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Survivor tweets. They're better than having 10 ugly looking pizzas to eat. Tweets.
Okay, so rather than getting into Twitter, and Antonio, I'm very sorry to report Rupert did not live tweet this week's Tribal Council.
Because that's what America needed. Actually, what America needs is the Roop bot's take on all of this.
Yeah. Did the Roop bot have anything to say from this?
I did not look for fear of being spoiled on anything that might come up on these voicemails. But I really let's not distill the many ramblings of Rupert Boneham into a robot version of a way in on last night. We don't need that.
Yeah, the Rupert bot was too upset to even comment on the Tribal Council. But one of the other survivors, not a game changer technically, but somebody who certainly feels slighted that they were not a game changer. Russell Hance has launched a YouTube channel recently. Antonio, are you a follower of the Russell Hance YouTube channel?
No.
Okay.
No. I heard about this, I think, but please tell me more.
So Russell Hance has created a new YouTube channel that you can certainly find. I believe it's his bio on Twitter. 640 YouTube members are currently subscribed.
And Hance Army.
Yeah. And it looks like that it is mostly just a PR operation to either change Russell Hance's image or to get him back onto Survivor. The first video, which was posted, seems like it's a response to a Jeff Probst quote from, I believe, 2012, when Jeff Probst commented that Russell Hance, while on the guest on the, this is how old it is, on Kelly Ripa and Michael Strahan show, back in the salad days of that show, Jeff Probst was saying this.
Who is your least favorite contestant of all time?
Well, the least favorite is probably one of the most popular. It'd probably be Russell Hance.
And then it's like a slideshow of him like spending time with his family, which is very confusing to me what he's going for here, because I feel like that Russell's ticket to Survivor, Jeff Probst is saying that he would want him to come back basically because he's a villain. But Russell Hance is almost in this video saying like, hey, look at my pictures with my family. I'm not a villain. I'm not a bad guy. So I don't really know what he's going for unless he's saying that he's changed and he's such a hero. He's such a good guy. That's why he should come back.
Well, in that vein, I don't know if you need to play the clip again. What was that acoustic music that was playing?
Yeah, I think we're going into John Mayer.
From Kelly Ripa or yes. From Russell's
yes,
video?
Yes, it's okay. Like a John Mayer montage on the YouTube channel. So right, that's right. That's one video. That was the first video.
Oh, Lord.
And the video says, hey, I'm not really that bad. Now, maybe, you know, Russell Hance is saying like, hey, I'm going to be the next Brad Culpepper.
Yeah,
you think
you
know me. You think you know me. I'm the new Brad Culpepper.
I don't. Yeah, exactly. He needs to do that blood water ritual, Rob. That's what he needs to
do. I don't even like blood water.
It's like vitamin water, but with blood. Yeah, I don't know. Ultimately, I think that that's what he needs to do. He's down there. He's in Louisiana, Texas area. Like, he's in the deep south. These things, he might be able to find somebody who knows something about this. Brad is in Florida. Like, get that blood water ritual going, Russell. What's in the second video, okay, Rob?
No, the second video. Forget second video. Then the recent edition added one day ago is a series, Antonio. Forget S-Town. Russell Hantz has now dropped a 8-part series to his YouTube channel.
Excuse me?
Yes, a 8-part series has just dropped on Russell's YouTube channel, and the series is called The Real Game Changer, Russell Hantz, a 8-part series.
Have you watched this? Can we do a post-show recap on
this? What's going on here? But it's really just the Russell Hantz supercut of Heroes versus Villains. And I don't understand why they didn't start with Samoa. It seems backwards to do. If you're going to do the Russell Hantz supercut, the 8-part series, I don't know why it needs to be 8 parts. I don't know why they couldn't just have it be 1 part. You can upload.
When you can make 8, you make 8, Rob.
Yeah, and it's the Russell Hantz Game Changer. Russell Hantz original Game Changer. And it's basically like every second he's on the screen, I think, like good times and bad. Like I was watching part 8. I was watching Sandra win the game and Russell get no votes. That's in there.
What in the hell is going on here?
It is.
Who made this?
Russell.
Who made it, though?
Russell.
Did he made it or he just uploaded
That's
it?
That's his chat. Well, it's the real game changer, Russell Hantz. Again, I don't know why we didn't start with Samoa and then lead into the I don't know if that's coming. I don't know if we're going to get to Redemption Island ever.
Was this sent to him like with a note with letters that were cut out of magazines with some kind of veiled threat? And he's trying to get ahead of it by owning it. Like, I don't understand this. I don't understand this. This is the ramblings of a madman. Like, what is he trying to do with
he's
this?
He's trying to prove he's the real game changer.
He's going to come at me for this,
isn't he? I'm the real game changer.
Oh, Lord. Well, look, taking anything aside, if you're labeling people game changers, he deserves that label 100%. 100%. I understand his frustration not being labeled a game changer. There is still time, I think, in his mind. I think he's seeing how this season goes, and maybe the one day ago part of this was not on his radar. Like, I think he's seeing generally how this season's going and thinking, they're going to do a Game Changers too. I want to be part of it. Like, I'm going to get ahead of this and put myself out there, Reynolds Topher style, and get my name back in the mix. Get all 650 people really excited to see Russell Hantz again. But to be fair to Russell, he is a game changer.
Absolutely. I have never, just like I never questioned, is Sandra a game changer?
Oh, no. Here we go.
I have never questioned that Russell Hantz is a game changer. I've called him Survivor Viagra. I've called him many things, Antonio. But a game changer, I have always said Russell Hantz is. The description on all these videos, it says Russell Hantz proves he's a Survivor original game changer. Watch the unforgettable power moves from Heroes versus Villains.
This sounds like an infomercial. Like, you know, and for 3 easy installments of $9.99, you'll get these tapes. Like, watch all these things. Like,
get all my tapes.
Did he go to YouTube and say, there's not enough Hantz supercuts. I'm going to put my own together here, and we're going to get ahead of this. Like, I really don't understand his motivation. Rob, if you were Rob, let's put Rob has a PR firm hats on
my
for Russell
fedora.
Hantz. But Rob has a PR firm, Little B Hats, on here.
I don't even like that little PR hat.
What is his best move? If he wants to prove that he's a game changer and get in the mix for Game Changers season 2, how does he do this with a YouTube series? What's the best move for Russell Hantz here?
How does he do it with a YouTube? Does it have to be with a YouTube series? I was going to say, get off social media. That was going to be my
first piece of advice. Yes. Don't put yourself at the center of this. That's the first bad part of this plan.
Yes, I think that do not get out there where people could say, like, oh yeah, Russell Hantz. Like, I haven't seen him do anything crazy in a while. Like, that's a good idea.
That's what you need. You need people talking about you. You need that secondary buzz. If you get out in front of it, you're not generating anything except for like this.
He needs that Tony buzz where Tony is just like goes away. It's like, boy, I wish Tony would come back. I wish Tony would come back. You know, yeah. Russell Lance never went away.
No, exactly. And he does. So Rob is a PR firm. The statement would be, let other people talk about you. Don't talk about yourself. Don't post your own supercuts to YouTube. Don't make it an 8-part web series. I can't even talk about it without laughing.
The real game changer.
I'm going to get murdered, aren't I? Like, he's going to come to my house at this point.
I think he's probably in a vacuum excited somebody's talking about the YouTube series. I mean, I think we have a platform here.
What's he doing in a vacuum? That's a weird place for him to hide.
I hate being in a vacuum.
I want to bust out of this bag. Yeah, I don't know. I think he needs to take a hands-off approach to this. If we're going to go into anything, that's what needs to happen. A hands-off approach. Okay.
My favorite thing, last thing about this, about Russell's
we didn't even get to your favorite
YouTube
thing
channel. The banner on Russell's YouTube channel, it's a couple of pictures of him, and in the center are the words Russell in the Star Wars font. All right, Russell, we got the YouTube banner ready. Okay, what font? I want Star Wars. That's the biggest movie franchise.
I don't understand this. I'm going to look at it right now so I could literally cry on this podcast. I don't understand what he is doing. Why did he just put the word Russell up there?
Yeah, not even Russell Hance. No, I'm so big, I don't need a last name anymore.
I'm looking at this now. What, is that a bird in the picture? Yeah,
there's like a picture of him with like a cockatoo.
I don't remember this moment at all.
That part's not from Survivor. That's like Jar Jar Binks. They went back and CGI'd him into my Game Changer video.
I don't understand why a bird will increase your chances.
I'm good with animals. I'm like Ty, see ya. They should give me money. I'm with a bird. I'm next to this cockatoo. Where's my money?
Oh my Lord. I hope everyone, as they're listening, has taken the time to go look at this because it
and
is
subscribe
incredible.
And subscribe, please.
The real game changer, part 8.
Part 8. Part 8. So we'll see.
Part 8, part 7 has 125
yeah,
views.
People skipped out in the middle and they just wanted to come back and see what the ending was, because then it comes back up to 277 views for part 8. But it just went up.
This is making me wonder, to be perfectly honest with you, this is making me wonder if he did something really bad in some other part of his life, and he's trying to make Russell Hance Survivor be the number one thing that everyone thinks about.
I don't think it's that complicated. I think he just wants to come back on Survivor.
Oh, this is sad, then. We shouldn't laugh at him.
He just wants to get back in. Come on.
Josh Wiggler be damned.
He's like the
in
Pete
terms
Rose
of
Survivor.
He is the Pete Rose of Survivor. I think that's a great comparison. And
he's the all-time hits leader.
Pete Rose, unfortunately, never played for the Houston Astros.
They call me
baby.
Russell Hustle. And I never bet on Survivor, except often.
And yeah, I never did anything, never got in any trouble for any, no, yeah. Like I said, Josh Wiggler be damned. Russell Hance is a game changer. I don't think Josh has denied that. Josh didn't want to see him on a game changer season, and I get that.
Yeah.
The problem with Russell is he's such a big personality. You put him on a season like this, it's the Russell show.
Yeah. And I just to follow up on that Pete Rose analogy, on March 8th, Russell Hance tweeted out, I bet both Sandra and Tony don't make it too far. They are both doing too much early.
I wonder where he bet that.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a Russell Hustle is fantastic. But yeah, this is something where I understand his desire to get back in the mix here. I get it. I do get it. And I'm not going to deny. I'm wondering, Rob, at what point do we say, you know what? It's been long enough. Let's do it.
I think that when we get to the point where, you know, Survivor really needs that boost, you know, I called him the Survivor Viagra when he came to Survivor Samoa. And I think that when Survivor starts losing its time slot, I think that's the next time you think about adding Russell Hance.
Okay. So he's getting ahead of that. He's saying, like, I think this could happen in the next couple of years. So I'm going to reestablish my base here, and it's all going to be positive. This is fascinating, Rob, that Russell has chosen positive messaging in this day and age. But here we are.
Yeah. Okay.
Positive messaging, a Star Wars font, a closet. It's the trifecta. That's what anyone's really looking for when they're talking about PR.
Yeah.
So United Airlines. United Airlines needs a bird
we
and
need
the Star Wars
a cockatoo. If we get out there with a cockatoo, people will, and the new logo with the Star Wars font, United.
Yeah, so here we are. Russell knows. So here we, yeah, Russell Hustle.
All right, Antonio, one other thing that I wanted to do, and
oh my gosh,
I know.
The hits keep coming.
So you and I had been talking the other day when we were recording the Better Call Saul recap that wouldn't it be fun to one day combine the worlds of Breaking Bad and Survivor. So I thought that we should do it maybe at the end of a feedback show such as this. And so we are going to get into the Breaking Bad spoiler territory. So I'm going to want to give like a full warning here, and I guess also Better Call Saul spoiler territory. But really, we're just going to be talking about the characters. I don't think we're going to get into, if you haven't been totally caught up on Better Call Saul, I think we can get by without spoiling major happenings in the world of Better Call Saul, right?
Yeah, I'll do the best I can. I think we'll be all right here.
I think we'll be okay. But what we want to do is start to recast the Breaking Bad universe with survivors. And it might be a fun exercise to go through here. But again, if you have not yet seen Breaking Bad, you're going to binge it, then maybe you could check out here as Antonio and I goof around with this for the next couple of minutes. Okay?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. And if you're a Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul fan, you're in for a treat. All right. So, Antonio.
Don't oversell it.
We won't oversell it. Okay.
You're in for something.
It's an 8-part series. We're recasting Breaking Bad. Okay. Antonio, so where do you want to begin in the Breaking Bad universe? Do we start with like Walter White out, or do we go from like outward into Walter White?
Oh, that's a very good question. I feel like you almost have to start with Walter White
okay,
and go
great.
Out. Yeah.
So let's start with Walter White. Now, again, we're not looking for a doppelganger, but somebody that their survivor career could parallel Walter White.
Yeah, or that, yeah, they've got the potential, or you see that in him. Walter White is a character who evolves. He goes from Mr. Chips to Scarface. He starts as one kind of person with a reputation, and he ends up with a different reputation. He becomes a legitimate gangster. So I have some people in mind, Rob.
Okay.
I'm wondering about you. I'm wondering what you're thinking about this.
Yes. Okay. So, well, why don't you start off? You tell me what you're thinking.
Well, as I said, Walter White, the story of Breaking Bad and why Breaking Bad really stuck out in the television landscape when it did is that Walter White starts as this guy who, when you take a look at him, you don't evaluate him with as much of a threat. He's got the crustiest, most embarrassing mustache. He just looks weak. We see him in tighty whities. Like, he's just not the kind of guy, and I'm not making a Lisi reference. We're not going to bring her into this mix yet, I don't think. But he's the kind of guy who has a reputation. When you size him up and you take a look at him at a glance, you don't see him as very threatening. By the end of his run on Breaking Bad, he's become one of the most notorious gangsters in the drug trade. He is a legend. He is known for being this guy who you can't trust because you look at him and he's one thing and he's another. I'm thinking, Rob, gangster in an Oprah suit, Cerie Fields.
Oh, okay. Well, oh, I like this. So you went with the reverse sex here. You think Cerie is the Walter White. Oh, I kind of do like this.
Yeah, I'm not a fan when you do comps. I'm not a fan of any athlete comps where you're like, oh, this white wide receiver reminds me of every other white wide receiver. Like, compare based on what their story and skills are. And I think Cerie, who gets herself off the couch and challenges herself to do something beyond anything she's ever experienced in her life, and it brings out and speaks to skills that she's developed in other areas, and she turns into just a stone-cold killer. And that, to me, is the Walter White story. And I think that Cerie Fields is Walter White. I just love Cerie. I have a spot in my heart for Walter. I think that's a big... I had a couple other names written down here, so I'm curious if one of them comes up with what you
Well,
thought.
Yeah, I had some other thoughts, too. You know, I was sort of like thinking teacher. I thought about Bob Crowley, but he really never makes a sort of a dark turn in his career. The one person that I thought was intriguing was I was looking for someone who started off as a nice, respectable, even borderline heroic family man. receding hairline for sure, who ends up by the end of this a hardened criminal. And thought Mike Scoopin for a second there.
Oh, no.
No, I like what you did. Yeah, I told you it's a dark turn. Okay. So yeah, okay, I like that.
I did my research, Rob. I didn't want to come to this not prepared. So I did my research. I thought you might say Tom Westman, Rob.
No, I don't think that Tom Westman ever goes full Heisenberg. Again, Russell Hantz has the hat to be Heisenberg.
I'm surprised that you don't think of what happens with Tom and Ian, and ultimately how that plays out as a very Walt Jesse dynamic there.
It's just that it's not dark enough for me to go, you know, like become full, you know, Breaking Bad. Like Suri, I mean, by the time she gets to Heroes versus Villains, so far this season, she hasn't been very Walter White-esque at all. But, you know, she's really like, say my name, everybody.
yeah. And that's true. And I thought the other possibility for Walter White, I had Brian Heidick, because there is that darkness there.
But he starts dark.
He does start dark, which is why I ultimately pick Suri, because Brian Heidick comes to the island as Walter White.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He comes with a plan to murder. And that's where we end up.
Let me throw one other name at you. What about David Wright?
Ooh, I love this idea. And I like the idea that David Wright, especially on Time 2, might go even further into this mix. I really do like that. David Wright is the beginning of Walter White, for sure, at the beginning of what he's doing there. And then I don't know ultimately where he ends up. I think he does not end up in a dark place.
But that he does also become a gangster by the time that he goes out at the final four in Millennials versus Gen X. I mean, there's that moment where he's talking about, like, there's that conversation where Ken is talking about where he is and where Ken, and like David's like, more like it's like up here. He becomes very confident in his abilities in the time that, like, he starts the game. Like, he's very, you know, timid about everything in the beginning.
It's true, and he's a brilliant dude who is bringing that to the game, but he's also
making fake idols,
right? He's bringing a lot that he has to overcome, which is where we find Walter White at the beginning of Breaking Bad. I like that. It's a pretty interesting comparison. I don't think that David Wright would like to be ultimately considered the Walter White of Survivor, whereas Suri already owns the gangster rep. But other than that, I think that's a decent comparison right
there. Okay, can we cast Jesse and then make a final decision on this?
Yes, we can. So go ahead.
It's more along the lines of the arc. My original pitch was probably closer to sort of the morality way to go, but we're just looking for some sort of like an arc to start as like an innocent, you know, physics teacher or a chemistry teacher, and then end up in a place where they're sort of this badass gangster. Okay.
Right. Yeah, because if we just go with physicality, or you just go with these comps, then when you say Jesse Pinkman, I say Zane Knight.
Zane Knight.
and that's not right. I mean, that's not a good comparison, because there is not a good Pinkman arc. But you tell me early Breaking Bad Jesse Pinkman isn't like Zane Knight. I feel like there's an accurate comparison to be made there.
I can see it. I had written down, what about Wu?
Oh, that's pretty good. My ultimate choice wasn't Wu, but I picked my ultimate choice for very similar reasons. And I think that we didn't even consider Tony as a Walter White type character. But if you put Tony in the mix there, then what happens with Wu is definitely some Walt Jesse stuff. And Wu is just a lovable kind of guy who maybe, I don't know. There's a lot there for sure.
Because Jesse maintains his likability throughout the entire run of the series. And I feel like that, you know, you sort of feel bad for him, or you really do feel bad for him. So I feel like Wu has that, where I don't think that Tony should be Walter White, but I do feel like that, you know, Walter does take advantage of Jesse at times.
Yes.
And that does happen to Wu.
And that's why I felt like Ian was an interesting choice with Tom there, because there is that huge moment. Speaking of taking advantage, we've already said Suri maybe as Walter White. What about Eric Reichenbach as Jesse?
Oh, okay. He is
Reichenbach.
Yeah, he does cook to some degree as an ice cream maker.
Yeah, he's the ice cream man and Captain Cook are not the Master P was the ice cream man, Rob. Like, the two are not that far apart. So
right. And I think the idea of, you know, the crystal meth is like the blue ice and ice cream. I think there's something there.
Well, and Eric was convinced to put himself at great risk, and it was ultimately to his undoing by Ceri, by and large, or by a group that Ceri was heading. And we know what happens with Jesse at the end of season 3 of Breaking Bad, Rob, and with Gail Bedecker. Walter White does pull some strings there and get Jesse to do some stuff that puts Jesse in much greater jeopardy.
Okay, I like this. You found the pairing. Okay, so Ceri is our Walter White. Jesse Pinkman is Eric Reichenbach. Where do you want to go next?
Well, let's get into the Better Call Saul of it all, Rob. How about Saul Goodman? How about Jimmy McGill? This is somebody who's charismatic, a little bit charming, somebody who's willing to create a whole bunch of schemes and plots and things that ultimately put them in a difficult position. Very memorable character in their own right, somebody who is capable of carrying a season of their own thing and maybe branching out into other mediums. I'm not sure what you were thinking with this. I don't want to. I feel like a little like AJ Mass here, like I'm drawing this out.
Yes. Who is the Saul Goodman?
Yeah. What I was doing archetype here is I was trying to find a way to make people feel like I was talking about you. But I'm actually thinking for Saul Goodman, Johnny Fairplay.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
All right. Good. We're on the same page.
I think that's a slam dunk.
Yeah. You could see Saul Goodman asking how much.
Yeah. I think they have a lot of the same suits also.
They definitely have a lot of the same suits. Yeah. Yeah, they shop at the Dumb and Dumber store.
Yes, he could pull off a grandma lie, and Saul Goodman works in elder law, so I think that they definitely could be on the same page. What do you think about Mike? Who's our Mike Ehrmantraut?
This is tough, because this is one where you get into somebody who has the history of Mike, and you start to limit your pool of survivors, I feel like, because Mike is a guy who served in the war, who is kind of above it all and over it and never really into it, and not a man of many words a lot of the time. Maybe he's just given to like a 2 or 3 word response, like, I don't know. Like, that might be something that Mike might say. So I had Rudy Bosch.
Rudy? Okay. I definitely could see Rudy with his experience. But to me, the sort of essence of Mike is that he's cranky. He's tired. He doesn't want to put up with Walter's BS. He doesn't want to put up with Jimmy's crap. He just wants to do his job and go home. And to me, I think Randy Bailey would be a fantastic Mike.
Yeah, you nailed it. That's absolutely right. You nailed it. That's it. That's it. That's it. Yeah, you're right.
What is this? GC, I'm tired of this.
Yeah, this is great. This is the point where I'm supposed to hang
cookie
up, Rob.
I don't want to give it to anybody.
You're the cranky, bored, over it element of it all. You completely. How does Mike feel about sugar? Generally speaking, he's a pimento cheese man. So no, yeah, this is no good. Randy Bailey all the way.
Yeah. What about going back to Breaking Bad? What about Hank?
This is tough. You said you had a good Hank. I don't have a good Hank. So why don't you walk us right into it?
If we only had sort of a confused at times bald cop. Oh boy, where can we find somebody like this? What about Tony?
Somebody who's very aggressive, who has a lot of ideas. They're minerals, Marie. They're minerals. I can see this happening. Hank, is there a such thing as as Vlacho's brow, Rob? Is that a thing? Is there a homebrew in Tony's garage?
I think so. I think it could happen. That Tony has to be Hank.
Yeah, I like Tony as Hank. For a second there, I didn't know exactly where you were going with this, but yeah, I think that's somewhere you're running all over the island. You generate natural enemies. You're a big target. You somehow manage to live a lot longer than anyone thinks you possibly could live, at least the first time through. And yeah, there we are with Hank and Tony. I like that a lot. What about this though, Rob? What about Skyler White? If you're talking about somebody like Skyler White, where do we find that in the game? Somebody who maybe comes into the game with a pretty standard character type, and then there's a lot of nuance, there's a lot of depth there. She can be a criminal, but she also is a victim. I don't have a particular name in mind. I'm curious as to what your thinking was here.
So I thought about this for a little bit. Now, again, it's complicated because we switched the gender role of Walter White to make it be Ceri. But, you know, I was thinking of somebody who ends up getting a lot of scorn from people. A lot of people don't love the Skylar. People look at her as complicit in things. Also, has the ability to run a franchise. I ended up going with Sherry Beathman.
That is fascinating. That is fascinating. That's a off-the-board pick that I did not expect. But as I said, I didn't have the best guess here, so that's not too bad.
Yeah, did you have anybody?
I was thinking someone along the lines of Sandra, someone who comes in with a reputation. If you were to look at her and say, oh, that's the military mom, like that's who she is. She's not, you know, she is who she is. Like, and then she ends up being someone who has this great potential for criminality, who can be part of the scheme. When you talk about taking heat, she did that's the part that I didn't really consider, because I thought for a second there, if you're talking about heroes versus villains, Sandra escapes the heat. She's the one who gets off a little bit scot-free, and everyone else takes the heat for what has happened there. So I had not processed that part of Skylar, the unfair heat from the fans. And so that part of Sherry Beathman actually makes a lot of sense, and what's going on there.
Yeah,
so,
I'm not feeling Sandra as Skylar. I think that when Walter comes in and says, I am the one who knocks, I just can't see.
Sandra would not respond well to
that.
Well,
the queen stays queen, okay? You know,
what about Dawn Meehan?
Dawn as a Skylar.
What about unfair criticism? I mean, there was the villain turn for Dawn, and she got a lot of negative feedback.
Right.
She was a victim of something that really shouldn't have been necessarily assigned to her. And she really generally is a good person. And there are good things about Dawn Meehan. And she's just looking out for her family, Rob.
Yeah, but what I like about Sherry more so than Dawn is that it's just at that same final tribal council, like Eric Reichenbach, right, who Jesse stands up to ask a question. And she's like, you know what? Sit down, Eric. she's going to like get really lippy with him. And I feel like that Dawn doesn't necessarily have that. I mean, that Skylar is pretty hardened by the end of Breaking Bad. And I feel like that Dawn does not ever quite get there on Survivor.
I can never picture Dawn at that most awkward dinner of all time with Walt and Jesse just slugging wine, but I can picture Sherry taking care of business there. So you're on point with that.
Okay.
We didn't cast a Chuck. We didn't cast a Gus. I think that at some point, I think Dom and Colin may have done a similar exercise to this, and everyone agrees that Lydia and Eliza are a slam dunk. So we don't have to go too far afield for
Lydia
Survivor
and Eliza are a slam dunk. I thought you were talking about Fishmonger Lydia. I was like, I'm really confused. Like a slam dunk for what?
The Cabbage Patch, Rob, obviously.
Yes, no.
Lydia from Breaking Bad and Eliza. Yeah, that's
easy.
A one-to-one.
That's easy.
Yeah, that's easy. But what about Gus Fring?
This is easy.
Tell me.
Chicken. Or Pollo, as they call him. The Chicken Man.
The Chicken Man. That's true. Man, that really, we need to do a prequel series where we get more of a backstory on Chicken then, because clearly still waters, or in this case, damn waters run deep.
Yeah. Pollo Morris.
That was not on my radar. That was not on my radar at all. Now, next you're going to tell me Cowboy is Tuco and my mind's going to be blown.
Yeah.
Like, this is well off the radar for me. I wondered about the thing. When I think of Gus, I think clean cut, very presentable, very brilliant in terms of their ability to get ahead of something and stay ahead of it. Very brilliant in terms of their ability to fend off things, always operating from a position of control. I thought Yul Kwan.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
Yeah, and that just makes me wonder if Yul Kwan has like a secret closet in his house where the darkness is kept. I don't know, but because Gus certainly has that. You know, I don't know if Yul Kwan's ever seen a box cutter, but yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking Yul Kwan for Gus.
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
I like chicken better, though. I like chicken better.
It's more fun. Okay. And then what about Kim Wexler?
What about Kim Wexler? So Kim Wexler is brilliant. Kim Wexler is independent. She's able to, and it's important for her to work on her own. She does great networking with people and branching out. She's able to pull off a con at a moment's notice. She's incredibly intelligent, incredibly independent. It's a Kim for Kim scenario, Rob, but do we go with Kim Spradlin here?
I think that that is pretty on point, and not just because they share a name.
And then it makes me concerned about the Kim Spradlin-Johnny Fairplay relationship, which I didn't know prior to this ever existed, but now I'm worried for Kim Spradlin.
Yes.
Although Johnny has gone full Jimmy McGill. He's had like a face
turn
here.
He's gone full Gene, I think.
He's gone full Gene. That's what's happened.
Gene
we marked
Fairplay.
It out, Rob. We marked it out. Gene Fairplay is in the mix.
All right. So, Antonio, all right. Great stuff here today. I know that this was a tough week to come in and do the voicemails, but you really did a fantastic job with everything. And, of course, I've been hearing nothing but praise for your work on the Better Call Saul podcast over on Post Show Recaps. And I can't wait to get back into listening to you and Josh discuss The Leftovers once again.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm excited, and I'm very thankful to be here this week. I hope I didn't offend anyone or I didn't go off base here. My heart goes out to everyone involved, and I just can't help but see the humanity in everyone that was involved and know that any bad thing or good thing that comes of this is as a result of us all being humans and looking out for each other and trying to find empathy for each other and not do to other people what we wouldn't want done to us. And I think that that's all I'm really thinking about. I think other people have said much more personal and important things about this. I hope that hope we were able to have an honest discussion about some of the things here and then have a lot of fun with what we did afterwards.
Of course, you can follow Antonio on Twitter. He is at AC Mazzaro with two Z's and one R. And
two Z's, one R.
Antonio, what's the hashtag today?
Oh, good Lord. Russell Hustle is still killing me because that's clearly what's happening. That's a Russell Hustle. I don't know what we're being hustled into.
OK, let me
happening.
Just pitch you on some other stuff.
All right. Tell me more.
OK, Gene Fairplay.
Gene Fairplay, which is already the reality show that I want to see Johnny Fairplay okay. start filming. Tomorrow.
We have yeah. the Taylor timeline.
Taylor timelines. I had that written down.
And Blood Water.
And what about our elixir of life, blood water?
Yes.
Yeah. That Brad Culpepper clearly drank before this season.
I like blood water.
You like blood water. I'm a little concerned what that might turn up if we search it on Twitter. But yeah, we can go with blood water. Let's go with blood water.
All right. People can just use it. You don't have to click on it.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good.
Okay. All right. So if you want to catch up with what Antonio and I are doing over on Post Show Recaps, of course, that's at postshowrecaps.com. You can subscribe to our Better Call Saul podcast at postshowrecaps.com/BCS iTunes. We have a episode one recap and a feedback show up for you guys over there. And then be on the lookout for the return of the Leftovers podcast as well on Post Show Recaps, Antonio.
Yeah, the leftovers that are in play there, Survivor Pizza. It'll be delicious.
Oh, yes. Yes. All right. So be on the lookout for that. Of course, we are going to get back into it this upcoming week with the latest edition of The Wiggle Room. And then David Bloomberg and I will discuss why Jeff Varner lost. And before you guys say, well, OK, we know what happened there. I believe and I'm going to ask David Bloomberg if we can get it to the point where let's just assume Jeff Varner lost the second he left for Tribal Council. Let's take a look at what happened up until that point, and then we don't need to revisit all of Tribal Council once again in that conversation. So at least
that's smart.
17 days of the game to talk through there with David Bloomberg in that podcast, and then we'll get back into everything when we get into the merge coming up next week. And of course, a big thank you to all of the patrons of Rob is a Podcast who help continue to support all of these crazy podcast episodes, no matter what the subject matter is. Really appreciate all of that. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Looking forward to hearing your comments on robhasawebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.